Hello and welcome to The Happy Middle, a podcast for women navigating the sometimes tricky in-betweenness of midlife. I'm Susie Dark, a coach, a writer, and a mother in my late 40s, so deep in this middle bit with you. This podcast is all about normalizing the trickier bits of midlife, celebrating the good stuff, and asking how we can turn the messy middle into a happier one. Expect honest conversations, interviews with some brilliant humans, and stories that I hope will help you feel more supported, reassured, and hopeful. So settle down, get comfy, and we'll get started. Okay, so hello and welcome. Today's guest is Katie Murray. Katie is a women's leadership coach, an inclusion facilitator, a speaker, and an author of Changemakers, a women's guide to stepping up without burning out. Katie works with female leaders who are, you know, wanting to make a real difference in the world, and she helps them to find the right balance between the important work that they do and looking after themselves and doing all the other stuff as well. And I'm really excited to welcome you to the podcast, Katie. So welcome.
Thanks, Susie, for having me. It's lovely to be here. I'm so glad we can finally meet and chat.
Yeah, it's very exciting. We've chatted on Instagram, like DM'd for a long time, but Never actually see each other face to face. So this is a very welcome treat for me today. And thanks for coming along. I'm excited to dig into this concept of change making because it feels like something that is coming up quite a lot at the moment around with the work I do with my coaching clients. I'm finding lots of the women that I work with who are in this middle bit are coming around to a real sense of wanting to make a difference now and searching for work that feels more meaningful, work that feels more important. Is that what change making is? Is that a good definition of change making?
Yeah, I love that definition. I don't think I'm the kind of editor on what the definition needs to be for change making. I think it's something we all find our own place with. And I love that idea of we get to a stage in our lives, don't we? Or perhaps it's always been part of our DNA. I think it's perhaps different for different people, but that sense of what is this all about? And what's meaningful to me? What's purposeful to me, as you've said? I really love, if you come across Richard Rohr's work, he talks about the first half of life where we're like creating the container of our lives, like we're building stuff and it's obviously shaped by capitalism and all the archies and isms that we navigate as we grow up. But we are building something, we're building our relationships, or we're starting a family, or we're looking at a career, or we're future focused and we're in that sort of building stage. And then he talks about the second half of life, which I feel like I'm tipping into now, where you are in your container and or you've perhaps remolded it to a certain extent, but then you're saying, how do I fill this container and how do I make it meaningful and purposeful? And how do I now fill my life with the things that are going to give me joy and a sense of kind of being alive and really feeling that? And I can really resonate with that sense of, let me live this now. There's no other containers that I'm going to create. Probably this is my partner. These are my kids. These are the days. These are my friends. This is where I live. Probably not all of that is going to significantly change now. And so how do I now really squeeze the juice out of these days? These are the days that I have. So there's something there about joy and aliveness and something there about meaning and purpose as well. And I see that a lot in my work as a coach too. And I feel that in my bones as well for this stage of life.
Yeah. That feeling of this being a time when big choices need to be made. And you say that we don't necessarily change the container. I find actually that a lot of my clients, the container has been changed without really them wanting it to. So there might be divorce, there might be situations coming up with older parents, there might be moves, big geographical moves that have to happen. Often these big waves of change that hit us that we might
I'm
not
thinking
necessarily
about body changes as well, isn't it? Like our body changes. So now let's have a feminist critique of Richard Rohr's work and say probably we can say that for particular intersectionalities, there is a time where we're changing a lot of that container, that sense of, there's a lot of transition, isn't there? Whatever you're juggling and navigating. I feel that with kids that are into teenage stage, I've really noticed that in terms of what my parenting looks and feels like and the gaps in my Yeah, it just feels like a huge stretch actually at this time. And yeah, you've mentioned sort of other family commitments and caring commitments, and all of that can feel a lot, isn't it? On top of hormonal changes and body stuff happening. There's a lot. There's a lot. And then we add in kind of global perma crisis and all the things that we can engage with because social media gives us so much data, or if we are engaged with news and things that are going on, there can really be a bit of overwhelm, I think, of all the things that we could be giving attention to. So I think back to your curiosity around change making, I think there's something about where do we choose to focus our energy as well, because I think we can be really spread very thinly and there's so much kind of demand for our attention. If we're on social media, you know, we're so familiar with that, aren't we, of how much we can be dissipated across so much different stuff and different loud noise. So there's something in how can I be focused and use the energy that I do have, which may be depleted because of all the things we've named, that limited capacity that I do have, how do I really take that kind of potency and fire and power and place it somewhere? And I don't think there's an obvious answer to that, but we can find some clues, we can find ways into where will I give my focus and attention, and where I do have a little, perhaps some capacity to speak up or write to my MP or go on a march or whatever it might be. There's a whole range of things we can talk about. What does change making look like? It's going to be really different for each of us. But I know that I don't have all day and all night to do it. It's like a limited amount of capacity. Yeah, so where am I going to focus feels important, and where am I going to give that attention and that energy?
And there's something, isn't there, in recognizing that at this stage of life, we are likely to feel energy levels depleted, as you say, like biologically, clearly, but also emotionally, and just the amount of stuff we have to juggle. And also, like, finding that thing, that purpose, that fire, that bit, that thing that you really care about, you really give a damn about, is such an energizing thing too. So even though we might be really exhausted thinking, when am I going to fit this in, actually having that can be a real, like, stimulant to everything else.
100%. I absolutely agree with that. And I work on this myself, but work with my clients around this. Like, where do you feel anger? Like, where is your rage and where is your anger? And where does that take you? What are the clues that can give you? And also, where is your joy? Like, where do you actually feel that aliveness, that kind of, I think about joy as that full body aliveness, and that can be pleasure, that can be, it can be found in all kinds of spaces, but where do we feel that joy? And that also gives us a clue. And I think, where also are we just curious? What are we just interested in? So something about kind of curiosity, joy, anger can give us a clue as to where we can focus. And it also helps us find our people, because being alone with any of this, as we know, is really so much harder. So where do we find people who are like-minded, have some kind of kindred spirit or something that they have that, you know, perhaps inspires you to be more like that, or models the way for you in some way? Like, how can I do that? Oh, that person's seems to be doing that. Let me watch and learn from them. Let me be inspired by them. So I think that those little clues can help us see where we can put our energies, but also help us find others, so we're not alone and we can be part of a collective, which for me is really key at this time of life as well, that we find others, that we are alongside, that we're not trying to lead, we're not stepping, particularly as white women in more activist spaces, like, we're not trying to step in and lead anything, really. We're certainly not taking over or using our power in that way. It's like, who's leading and how can I follow, and where can I add my voice, and how can I support what is already happening and people have been working on for decades and maybe even millennia? How can I just wake up and be part of that, rather than wake up and think it has to all be about me and centering myself in that way? So yeah, there's lots in there, but I think the clues are important, and then that can help with the overwhelm of, oh, there's so much, what do I get involved in?
So I'm seeing this lovely Venn diagram then. So we've got, you know, anger, rage, curiosity, and joy as well, and then finding that piece in the middle, which is the part of the huge puzzle that we could follow, because clearly there's so many things, so many ways that we could go, so many things that we could pick up and go for, but I'm guessing, like, picking, starting with one is more reasonable, kinder to self, more useful to the rest of the world as well. And then picking up on what you said about finding your people, so this feels like an important piece of the work that you do, the things that you write about as well. Is that right?
Yeah, so I host a group called Changemakers Collective. And so I'm, I guess, using those words that we've already named around what does it mean to be a changemaker? And some of those women are inside organizations, they're leading in national spaces, international spaces, or really local spaces. The
Yeah.
sphere of influence is really varied. And I'm not really bothered about what people are doing. It's more about the how and the kind of the willingness to be in a place of inquiry around that and be with others around that. And that collective, the word collective feels really important to me, as I've already said, but just that sense of how do we find solidarity with each other? And even though we're in really different spaces, how can we genuinely cheerlead one another? Because I think as women, we don't learn how to genuinely celebrate other women. We are socialized for competition or comparison, actually, rather than really genuinely loving and caring about what others' impact in the world. And it's, I think there's a lot of unlearning for us to do. I can get hooked into comparison really easily. So part of what we're doing in that collective is finding a way to notice that and work with that and be able to then really fully support each other, even though we're in really different spaces. And then there's also a bit about the vulnerability that people can step into, and the celebration and the vulnerability is like often we can, I think as women, we often do connect around challenge quite easily. I'm struggling with this. And I think often we do find in our friendships, obviously it's different for everybody, but there's a sense of telling people what we're not good at or what we're struggling with may come easier to us than sharing our bigness and our ambition and our desire and our brilliance. I think in my coaching work, I attempt to and aim to create a space where people can bring all of their brilliance into that space, and it won't threaten me, and it won't, we're working together as a group to hold that, and it may threaten us, but we'll do that work of disrupting and detoxing from that. I use that phrase disrupt and detox a lot. What are we disrupting together by trying to do this differently? Does that answer your question? Yeah, collective
Yeah, I
being
think so.
together, trying to find a new way to be together. That's what that group is really about. And in reality, people are bringing into the conversations like their daily challenges at work or in their communities, their daily, yeah, joys. We talk a lot about joy. We talk a lot about the wins, the small moments of shift or progress. I'm really into that. Let's notice what the small things are, because that's where we build a sense of what's possible and we build a kind of sense of momentum. And we're more likely to do the big stuff in bunny ears if we know that all the big stuff, isn't it, is basically an accumulation of consistent, persistent, tiny things over time. It is my belief. I think rarely does the big stuff come out of nowhere. I think it often is built over time. So yeah, that sense of being together and finding, maybe perhaps in the online world as well, it's finding ways to really connect and have, even though we can't be together physically, I guess that online space enables connection, even though we're not in the same geographic places.
Yeah. And that's what's wonderful, isn't it? That the breadth of relationships and the difference that we can encounter through those kind of online relationships, minds that we can find and connect with that we would never, ever have the opportunity to without that. And I think it's really wonderful in that way. And also, but also it does make me think about gaps in our physical person to person in the same room kind of relationships. And I think those can come up as well at this time of life. I know I've had moments where I feel, I don't know, sense of regrets about friendships that have been lost or relationships that have gone awry. We've moved locations so many times and relationships just fall by the wayside. And there always does feel like a starting again kind of energy when you're moving, you know. I'm working with a few clients at the moment that are sensing that as well. What do I want our relationships to? And I'm wondering how that links into this concept of finding your people, like finding your people in real life.
Sure. And I certainly, for me, there's something about having like a local expression or a community expression of whatever the change making is for you. That feels really important. I think we can do the kind of online campaigns and we can be involved in, and I think Instagram or wherever we like to play in social media can give us an impression like we're doing stuff. And there's something for me about that's great. And there is stuff I'm doing there that I think probably does make a difference. I'm adding my voice to the bigger collective voice. That's important. Actually, what I'm doing in my day-to-day life, as you say, that feels that for me, that then that piece needs to be there. And in my life, it's been there much more significantly. So yeah, in various different iterations of, like you said, moving house and finding community, I've been really involved locally. And that's probably missing for me a little bit now. And I'm in that place of like, oh, where is that going to be? Who are my people locally? It's a really lovely, I live in the Northwest in the Lake District, and there's a really lovely stage of life, menopause, perimenopause support, a kind of gang of incredible women that's forming, and not around me, I've discovered them, and that feels like, oh, there's a lovely group there. There's an incredible anti-racism movement in Cumbria, which is just doing phenomenal work. And again, for me, it's, oh, here are some kindred spirits, here are some like-minded people. So there's, again, there's something about what are you passionate about, and there will be somebody nearby who also shares that. And finding those connections, I think, I think there's something about, so I'm 49, I'm saying to myself I'm in my 50th year, and finding that quite comforting, that if I say 50 enough times, by the time I get to 50, it will be normalized and fine, and I'll be ready for it. And noticing in, I guess, in the 50s, as I'm yet to discover, that as kids move away and do their own thing, and partners, whatever's going on in that space, and as you've mentioned, lots of people going through transition in that space, I hope to still be with my partner, that's my plan, but there's something about friendships, just to pick up on what you're saying, that they are the people that you do life with, right? Whether that's people with some heritage and history and consistency, or whether it's new friends gathered around a cause or a passion or a hobby or an interest. And I'm feeling so deeply how much I need and love my friends. And I think I've always known that, but there's something about these few years, perhaps I'm just really leaning into the friendships. This is so important. And then I also wanted to add the kind of finding your people thing, and maybe particularly online, we can get into those bubbles of likeness and sameness. And in my equity and diversity work, I'm really aware of that around, where do I find people also who are really different to me and who will challenge me and who are not just people like me, who it feels easy. There's lots of affinity, lots of connection. And that's lovely and important, that there is something, I'm just, even as I'm saying out loud to you, I'm like, oh yeah, I need to keep challenging myself to seek relationships that will also challenge, because they are really different, maybe different stage of life, different gender expression, different political perspectives. So it's finding our people, isn't it? Because there's something about being and belonging in a group that feels safe and like we have that connection. And it's also having the challenge of difference and stretch as well. Yeah. I think it's a both and, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, because it's so easy, isn't it, to stay in that bubble, particularly when the online bubble, it's so easy to create your own space where you just see similar viewpoints that feel good, etc., and not particularly healthy for ourselves or for society as a whole. Yeah, I feel like I'm quite fortunate in the space where I live, because I live in a really small village, and in lots of ways it's not at all diverse, but in lots of ways it is. And because everybody is in each other's pockets and everybody knows each other, and there's so many like links, it feels quite an old fashioned way to live. Like everybody knows what's going on. So I do necessarily end up in conversation with people who hold different views from myself. And I do find that challenging. And interesting. Yeah, there's something, I think there's some kind of something in like how we live and how we're able to get to know one another. Geographically as well. Again, I'm fortunate in that. I'm thinking back to when I lived in in London, and how different that situation was. I didn't even know the people who lived next door to me or above or below. Like we'd just pass in the corridor and never have conversations. Yeah. So relation, finding those people who are our people, but also people who are, from having different perspectives, different viewpoints as well.
And I'm also hearing in what you say there, Susie, like a groundedness, like a, where am I? Where is my like physical geographical positioning? Like when I stand on the ground, on the earth, on the soil of the planet, like where am I? And whether that's a city or a town or wherever we are, that there's a connection to that place. There's something about kind of geographical place and space that feels increasingly important to me. And I'm someone who never really understood the sort of gardening thing as a kid or as a young person. I was like, oh, whatever, I don't really get that. And I liked nature and green, great, wonderful. Where now, again, I notice in myself, I'm like, oh, I really want to plant something. I really want to grow something. And that's really different. That's a massive change in me to start tuning into that. And there's something about imminent planet collapse stuff that I'm exploring in my understanding of what climate change means and where we might be heading or where we are heading or what is currently happening. Many communities impacted currently, all of that. Where it's like, I just want to grow a plant. There's something about, let me just bring this, my, so much feels out of control. Maybe it's that. So much feels so discombobulating and unsettling and out of control in the wider space. And so let me find something quite close to home and something that I can feel that's contained and controllable. I notice that in myself, there's that tendency. And it's lovely to plant something, and that's, I can see your plants behind you and they're beautiful. There's something so nourishing about that. I'm really noticing that shift in myself to really be craving that and walking locally and just being really grounded in the space I'm in. And when I visit a city, which I do for work a lot, I love to walk. I don't really like using transport now. If I can walk and I see the connections between places, there's just something in my bones if I want to see how this place is and feel it with my feet and be in it. And maybe that's part of, there's some stuff for me just about being more embodied in my own self and in my practice, which I'm unlearning a load of disembodiment from earlier years and feeling more in my own body and in the place I am physically. And because when we're online, which I am a lot with clients, we are somewhere else, aren't we? We're present between us on the screen, but I'm not physically in my space right now. I'm being present with you somewhere. When I'm hosting groups, we're kind of with the group. So something for me about coming back into my body and back into the physical groundedness of that. Yeah, that's new for me. That's quite new, experimenting with that more.
Yeah. You're making me think of this practice, orientation practice, that comes from organic intelligence. And this is this a way of staying present with self and with surroundings, and what we see and what we take it through the senses being really important, and like bringing us back to our bodies. And we spend so much time with, just like me particularly, I'm such a heady person. Like, I'm always in my head, in my thoughts, not seeing with my actual eyes what's outside the window. I've got the most beautiful view of just rolling fields, huge sky, green trees. Everything's green now and it's just gorgeous. I have to remind myself to look up from my screen and look out the window and remember that I am here and I have a body and I'm in this place. So speaking about embodiment and all of that stuff, I'm thinking now about the slant of your work, which is around helping women go for what they want to go for, make change, but do that without completely burning themselves out. And I'm wondering where you sit on that. I know you talk about joy a lot. Is that an important piece of avoiding that burnout, that tendency to burn out?
I think so. I'm sure there's lots of data and research on it. I'm coming at that from a more sort of qualitative experimentation that I've been doing myself and with the people that I'm working with. And then there are lots of books that I'm reading where I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense to me. When we connect with our bodies more, when we understand what helps us to feel more alive, when we feel that boost of energy. And that, of course, is not the panacea for burnout, is it? It's not do that and you won't experience burnout, because we are all navigating the system, workplace systems and societal systems that are not designed for our thriving, is my belief. And if we hold more marginalized identities, then even more so, those spaces are tricky. And yeah, so with a lot of clients I'm working with, it's that balance of what's the system change that is something that individuals can influence, but probably not do on our own. Like, that definitely needs to be collective action, I think. And also then what's the personal responsibility and focus and attention I can give myself to not allow this system to drain me and crunch me in it. Mm. And I've chosen to exit workplace systems and work as an independent consultant. I've been doing that. I've been running my own business for 15 years. I left an organization and previous organizations that I work for. And I now consult to organizations. So I'm regularly touching other systems, but I'm not choosing to be in them.
Mm.
And I'm working with people who are choosing to be in them or are not yet able to exit.
Yeah.
And I know that's a privilege that I've set up my life such that I can have quite a lot of autonomy over how I use my time and where I give my energy and then my role to support others to do that. Yeah, joy is a big piece. So I think particularly, so this is maybe a bit of a tangent, but I think I was thinking about hope quite a lot through the last few years and of just everything that's been going on. And then I realized that hope for me is I find it quite hard to find it. Like, to try and access hope or discover hope feels quite tricky for me. I can access and find joy. And I realize that for me, joy is actually the antidote to despair, not hope. And actually, when I'm in my joy, I then can feel more hopeful about the future, about my life, my place in the world, all the other things that we might feel despair around in terms of what's going on around us. Joy feels like a really core practice in so many of the things that we're talking about. I don't think it's the only thing that will support us in not burning out or managing our a sense of overwhelm, but it is a really key practice. There's lots of others that I talk about in the book around which all really are small things, actually, like really small habits that we can build into the day that don't just add more to an overflowing yeah. to-do list, but all things that help us come back to our body, help us reset our central nervous system, help us just feel good in our bodies. And then I know now from the practice, because I've been doing them over years and with clients doing them over time, that the benefits really accumulate. So it's you can do a joy practice in a day and it feels great, but you do it every day for weeks and months and maybe even years, and it really becomes part of your rhythms and who you are and how you go about your day. That's when it, you know, the beauty of that really kicks in. Yeah, I'm cautious about, can we avoid burnout? I just think the systems we're in at the moment are so strained and so mm-hmm. much in lack and scarcity and so extractive of us and our labor that I'm in a slightly pessimistic place, actually, honestly, mm. about that. I think we need collective support and action. I think we need collective care. I think we need to find community. I think if anyone's listening to this and you feel really alone in your workplace and or alone in your business space, then finding others that can support you, that's really key. I think go to your GP, get all the support you need, like, do all the things to care for yourself. I look at a holistic resilience map where you think about all the different aspects of who you are and what gives you energy. So emotional, mental, spiritual, relational, all the different aspects, lots mm. more. And so we can look at that and go, what can I do? And that's the personal agency part. But the systemic change part is not that going yeah. on a spa day is not going to solve systemic oppression. No. So I'm aware I'm being a little bit cautious in response to your brilliant question. Yeah, I don't think I have, like, here's the A to Z formula, here's the answer. I feel yeah. like I'm more alongside women as they're navigating that and making their own choices about how much of myself am I going to give to this? How long mm. am I going to stay here? How can I make this more doable? How can I create even a little bit more wriggle room? How can I create more space for the things that I love and the things I'm passionate about in this system, the change I want to see? How can I really safeguard and protect that? And maybe have less of the BS that's draining me. That's the kind of practical stuff that people are mm-hmm. wrestling with. Or how do I exit and what's the next stage of my life? What will that look like now? And what's the next iteration of myself and my career? And there's lots of those kinds of conversations as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I speak with lots of clients who have or are exiting
yeah.
those kind of workplace systems. I'm also thinking about just burnout in general coming from relationship work, the work that we do within our lives outside of work as yeah. well, like how all of the systems are set yeah, up to be so extractive
yeah.
and depleting. And yeah, it can be so difficult to find like balance, like this holy word, like how can we find the right yeah. balance in our lives? It's almost an impossible task when we're
I'm challenged around. So we've talked a bit about joy, and recently for me, and again it's quite new, I've been really challenged around rest. I read Patricia Hersey's work and others just really mm. challenging me around that. So what does it mean to be well rested, and how countercultural that is, just that statement. And what does it mean for me to be more work and live more seasonally rather than being always on, which is what culture and all aspects of all of our roles demands of us? And what does that mean to be more in a cycle rather than a straight line? Like, those kinds of rhythms and practices, I think, do start to shift the axis of that and help us center that all a bit differently. And again, I find unless I do that with others, it's just me and it's, I'm going to do something differently. So again, that collective piece, I think, really helps. I mean, I remember when we were due to speak last week, and I remember I rearranged, for which thank you for your flexibility. And it was really challenging. I'll just name this as a bit of a kind of microcosm of what we're talking about. Like, there was some stuff going on in my wider family, which was really taking a lot of energy. I was feeling really drained, but I noticed that I could have easily pushed through. Like, I absolutely could have gone, okay, here's my day and I'll just do the things. And it was that real choice moment of going, actually, no, I need to rest today. I'm really tired. Plus I need to do some appointments, which I think was the thing that overlapped for us. I need to go to those things. So I need to prioritize those and everything else. I actually need to sleep on the sofa and I need to walk outside and that's it. And that, to do that on that day, to give myself permission for that. I'm steeped in this work. I do this all the time. I was struggled so much to give myself permission. So much permission was needed to make those choices. And I'm really glad I made those choices. But so much within me was resisting it, screaming, resisting that I should be doing the choice, which was crack on, push through, here's you to do. And this is not new for me. This is like decades of work. Wow, this is still so powerfully ingrained in me. And there's still so much unlearning and detoxing and disrupting to do. And just that's a little mirror moment, isn't it? Where you get those moments of like, oh my word, okay, there's still more work to do here.
That resonates so strongly. Like, I know I talk about going gently all the time and being kind to self and trying to find like the gentlest ways to make change. But I think I bang on about all of that because my default is to just push, go hard, just crack on. Yeah. Just knuckle down, get on with it, Susie. You don't need to have some space out. So it's always like a practice. It's always work. Yeah. Okay, so this podcast is for midlife women, and we're talking about all the kind of things that we might be coming up against. I'm noticing as well in work with clients in this stage of life that this feels like a time as well where we feel a desire to find, not, I don't know about finding our voice. I don't think it's finding our voice. I think it's deepening into a voice and working out like who we are and how we're going to show up in this world as well. And that feels really connected to this piece about change making and the piece as well about doing that work while looking after ourselves as well.
I think you've named it beautifully. I feel like I care so much more about some things and then I care so much less about so many other things, and so there's something in that combination which has brought a real clarity of, okay, so if I really care about that, what am I going to say about that? What do I actually want to say about that? And Cole Arthur Riley has this brilliant, her work Blacklist Jesus is beautiful if people want to find that, and she lots challenges me in her work, but there was a lovely piece she did around notice in your body where all the words have gone that you have not spoken. I've not expressed that as beautifully as she does. Check her out. But something about when I haven't spoken up and I've swallowed it down, or I've played small, or I've held back, or I've pleased somebody else, or I've whatever I've done in that moment, where has that gone in my body? Where have those words gone? And that really landed for me. It's like, oh my goodness, so many times, really three decades of my life, I've done that. That's been like a thread that I've pulled around, well, what actually do I want to say then? And that's been years really of figuring that out. And what do I really care about? I felt it, but I haven't necessarily articulated it. And because I've been a facilitator for a long time, my role has been to support other people to speak up and to hold a space for others, which is brilliant. I love that work. I'm really good at it and I really enjoy it. And I know I do it well. But that's not about me taking up space. That's about holding space. There is a power in that role, but it's not about me necessarily taking up the airtime. It's about other people having the airtime. So I've had to really navigate what is it I actually want to say, not what my clients are trying to say, but what I want to say. And that's been a journey probably for 5 or 6 years, maybe even a bit more. And now I feel, and I think that watching a genocide unfold in real time, there's some clarifying that happens, right? Where you're like, am I going to not say anything, or am I going to keep speaking about this? And what does it feel like to keep speaking about this when nobody's really responding? And all those things come up, isn't it? And it's all kind of insignificant, my own little life, in comparison to that. But that piece about visibility and what is it I actually want to say, and then how can I find a way to say it like me, so I'd have to be like someone else, and how do I say it so it feels relatively okay? It may feel quite tricky, but it's enough that I can still do it. I think there's a difference, again, I'll name my whiteness here. I think there's a difference between being genuinely unsafe and actually just uncomfortable. And that's clarifying that for myself has been really helpful. So I know that, again, for some people with particularly marginalized identities, it is at times genuinely unsafe to speak up or to say things or to be in a room in a certain way. And I need to step into my privilege often and go, no, it's just uncomfortable. I'm not actually unsafe. Yes. I need to speak. It's quite difficult to do this, but actually I'm not. I'm okay. So crack on. So that's helped me as well, if that helps. And I think back to the anger piece, I think I've read a lot that you shared around rage, which has really resonated. And there's something about caring less about a lot of things, but caring more about some things, where that rage really situates us, and the clarifying of that and the energy behind that, like the really beautiful energy behind that. It connects to justice, doesn't it? And connects to a real deeper sense of like what's okay and what's not okay beyond ourselves. It's a real sort of shared consciousness, I think, which is part of that, which is, yeah, really motivating. And I think supports us when we feel nervous, shy, exposed, vulnerable for using our voice or speaking up about whatever that might be. And I'm thinking a bit about writing or posting on social, that, but I'm also thinking about my clients who are in meetings and want to call somebody in or want to challenge something or want to have a one-on-one conversation. That visibility and that voice is in so many different spheres, isn't it? It's absolutely not on the stage or necessarily with a microphone. It's like in all those really small ways. When are we swallowing or when are we speaking? And again, it's a journey, isn't it? I don't know. What do you think? Do you think we just get there? Or do you think, for me, it's still a practice, like we've already shared. I think there's a lot of unlearning still happening around it.
There is. I'm thinking this double bind between the discomfort and sometimes, like from my own experience, like actual pain of swallowing your words and not saying what you want to say, and the discomfort and potentially also pain of speaking what you want to speak. And it feels like this real problem that we can end up pivoting and going round and round in circles, because either option feels really uncomfortable. So we just sit in the nothing space, which is also really uncomfortable. Maybe it's just that there's no easy way of winning.
Yeah.
Without doing something. So if we swallow our words, that just feels bloody awful. Yeah. If we go for it, that can feel awful too.
Yeah.
But ultimately, we've got somewhere more positive, more, we've used our agency a bit more.
I think it's, I'm thinking about an Audre Lorde quote, which again, I don't think I'm going to say as articulately as she does, but I think she says something like, if I stay silent, I'm afraid. And if I speak up, I'm afraid. So I might as well just speak up. So also there's so much grace we need for ourselves here and self-compassion around. It's going to be clunky. It's going to be messy. I know that I'm not going to say it right. I'm not the expert. I don't know all the details. I feel like I should be in all that conditioning of I have to do the master's degree before I can possibly comment. So, no, you don't need to be prepared. You don't need to read all the research. You can just say that sort of letting go of some of the perfectionism and again, all kind of traits of how we've been socialized, and there's a lot of whiteness playing out there, isn't there, around how we feel we should be speaking and how we tone police other people and all of that. So I think there's just a real grace for ourselves needed there, and like just so much permission giving And support for one another too, because I'm also thinking that's so easy to say, but if you feel like you're going to be judged or you're going to get a load of criticism, that can be really tough. So how do we support each other as well in our change making in that way? So again, if I see a colleague who's speaking up or a friend who's speaking up, like how can I really cheerlead that and support that, lift that, just encourage her and or be inspired by her, rather than going into that, we so easily can judge one another, can't we? Critique one another. Oh, she hasn't quite said it. Well, I don't think it's just all of that extra layer. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It feels like every single subject that comes to the podcast is murky, and the more we go into it, it's almost like the more murky it becomes, because it's okay, there's just all of these different pieces and there's no clear-cut answer, and that's okay. And maybe this time of life is where we get to sit in all of that and go, do you know what? It's messy, and that's just the way it is.
The not knowing, isn't it? And the admitting the not knowing, and being okay with the ambiguity, the letting go, the lack of control. As you said that, Susie, I was thinking about where do I feel most clear? Like, where do I feel most connected to my voice, if we're thinking about voice and what I want to say? And I have a lot of judgment about myself, and about, I think I've even twice in this conversation talked about whether I can articulate something clearly enough. So that's interesting how that's come out in my language. I judge myself a lot around clarity and around articulation and my capacity to do that. And I really admire people that do that well. So there's something there that's a bit of a pattern that I can explore more with my therapist, perhaps. Why was I saying that? Yes, where is it that I feel most clear? And I was thinking it's actually where I'm most in my body. So just making, I think, a link back to what we were saying earlier. So I noticed that I've been dancing more in the last 2 years, and I want to dance more, and I'm going out and I'm going to raves and all this kind of stuff, which is awesome and incredibly fun. And also I know that it's actually about this. It's about being free from a lot of the self-limiting beliefs and the judgments, the stuff that's in my head, the inner critic voice, the expectations of others, and just being it, that sense of freedom in my body. And that's where I connect with it. I'm not, none of us are free till all of us are free. That's when I connect with where do I want to be in these conversations, and what's really important to me to connect to. That's where I connect with the sense of like collective consciousness. I feel it on, I don't go on lots of marches, but when I have been on marches, I feel it on marches as well.
Me too.
Something about the physicality of it and the collective experience. So when I dance and when I march, those, that's where I feel really clear. This is what I want to say. This is what I'm passionate about. This is what I hope for and long for and desire for and reimagine. Like all of that just comes in. So that, yeah, just noticing that in our conversation now.
I love that. And it's interesting, isn't it? So there's embodiment there. There's also being in community with others. There's being in the moment. There is
So present, yeah.
being present and embodying something that you care about, that you believe in as well. Like all of these things feel so important. So yeah, more of that,
Yeah, that
definitely.
connection to aliveness. And I was thinking about your discussions around messy middle and what that feels like and what happy middle might feel like. I was just thinking about that in preparation for our conversation and recognizing that I don't feel like I'm in the later stages of my life yet at all. And maybe just to say that my mum died young. My mum died at 43. I was 18. And so now I'm 49. And it was really significant when I turned 43 and just beyond. It's like, oh my gosh, I have literally no role model for this. Like on a kind of deeper psychological level, it's like, gosh, I don't have anyone ahead of me showing me the way. And I've found ways through that after a few years of I'll find other women and who else are my role models and who are the elders in my life. And I've worked quite intentionally to have those people around me. But something about navigating the space going forwards, I sense myself. I don't really know what my old lady looks like, whereas I know a lot of people can really visualize themselves in their kind of 70s, 80s, or whatever. I don't know or expect that I'll live to that age, but I'm increasingly attempting to imagine, because that feels good, to imagine great functional health, strong bones, all that good stuff, and marching and protesting and then retreating. I host retreats with a beautiful friend of mine, and that space where we retreat is so nourishing and nurturing. And so my future self, she's marching, she's protesting a lot, and she's connecting with that rage and with collective expression. And then she's retreating and resting and nourishing herself. And then she's maybe doing some writing, some kind of creative writing, maybe some coaching, because I love the connection with people, maybe holding space for others to be in retreat. I don't know. But that feels, it's not too far away for me to grasp that life, actually. But that feels really good. Like the messy to happy. I'm like, yeah, that's my kind of vision of what this stage can be like for me. And that feels like something I want to step into. So it feels like a good, really good stage to be in.
Yeah, sounds wonderful. Yeah, I'm all for
come
that.
Come join
me. Yeah, I'm definitely. I'm hoping to be like the women who smashed the Magna Carta cover in the British Library the other day.
Weren't they amazing? Like,
heroes. Yeah, wonderful.
They were just brilliant. I loved it. I was like, please don't hit your thumb. So I watched her like bash the nails, and it's like, oh, hold it steady.
Yeah. So I want more of like good troublemaking and plenty of rest. Yeah. And dancing, still dancing. Yeah. Oh, thanks so much, Katie, for a very rich and ranging conversation. It's been wonderful having you here.
Good to be here.
Thanks for coming along.